MechCast, Sunday, March 28th, 2021. Hey, Mech Geeks, it's time for your MechCast, the show for Mech Geeks by Mech Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MechCast. Glad to be back here with you for another week of Apple news, information, tips, tricks, and all the goings-ons and going-outs in our little community, our little MechCast community. How you doing? I hope you're having a great, wonderful week. Things looking pretty interesting in the news this week. We got quite a bit going on, believe it or not, in Mac and Apple world. You'd think it might slow down a little bit. Well, you know, I guess we're still waiting on some products is what it really comes down to, right? First half of the year, we've been expecting some items and we really haven't seen much yet. So could happen any day. And of course, there's lots of speculating going on around that. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. We're going to talk about upcoming Macs. We're going to talk about possible upcoming iPads. We're going to talk about possible new technologies coming to this year's iPhones. Of course, we're going to get into Apple TV stuff as we do now. Apple TV Plus just continues to roll out the potential new content, I guess I should say. None of it's really hitting the service yet. We've got, there's some great shows on the service, but there's more coming. Let's just say that. And we have more on Apple's AR/VR headsets. Of course, we'll talk about discontinued products. And maybe some new features that are in some of our favorite products, our favorite new products. And what else we got going on? AirPod stuff, Apple Watch stuff. Like I said, a little bit of everything in this week's news, I think. And then we're going to get to some of your feedback, some follow-up on some previous things we've been talking about on the MacCast, including some tips and tricks on iCloud syncing and how to get that fixed. We're going to talk about displays and MacBooks and older computers. We're going to talk about deals on discontinued Apple products and are they really good deals? Got some community app recommendations that are follow-ups to a couple of things of the moment that I've had on previous episodes of the MacCast. And then that will kind of round out the show, I guess, looking through the show notes. So should be a good one. But before we get into things, we do have to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor. I want to talk to you first about CashFly. Absolutely love CashFly here at the MacCast. They're actually the reason you get this show reliably and quickly each and every week. They've been making the MacCast possible. We absolutely love them. And they want to be able to do similar things for your website because when your website doesn't load quickly, people are going to lose interest. As a matter of fact, they've estimated that for every second it takes your page to load, it can cost your company up to 16% in engagement. That means fewer visits, means fewer customers, and that's really not good for anyone. And CashFly has your back with their new web optimization capabilities. They can take all your content and optimize it before it's delivered to your visitors without requiring any development effort from you. And with the recent addition of their flexible Edge application platform and implementation services, their capabilities reach far beyond those of any traditional CDN. CashFly's web content optimization solution includes things like powerful APIs to help solve content distribution problems. They have on-the-fly next-generation image optimization, application load balancing, and smart asset delivery. Listen, if your website is directly tied to your revenue, and you know it is, optimize your site's content now. Guarantee the best user experience for all your customers, no matter where they are or what device they're using. The good people at CashFly are even going to provide a free optimization consultation for listeners of this podcast. That's right, just for you. You can know exactly where your site stands today with a Lighthouse score report and learn how CashFly's web optimization solution can help add 60 points to your score instantly. Just visit mac.cachefly.com. That's mac.cachefly.com. mac.cachefly.com. Get that Lighthouse score report and learn how Cachefly can help add 60 points to your score instantly. And a big thank you to Cachefly for their support of the MacCast. Mini LEDs, they're the hot new display technology, or so the analysts and rumor mongers, I guess, keep telling us. They say that Apple has been working on mini LED displays, potentially for future new iPads. We've been hearing about that for a while now. We're expecting them to release it into, or introduce it rather, in the iPad lineup this year. Current belief is that the new iPad Pro 12.9-inch model will get the new display technology with its next update, which may happen mid to late April, at least according to the latest speculation from Bloomberg. Analyst Ming-Chi Kuo also thinks that Apple will bring the tech to the MacBook Air sometime next year in 2022, but they will reserve the tech for the iPads in the Pro lines only, while moving to OLED panels in the less expensive iPads like the iPad Air. So Kuo thinks Apple's going to go with the mini LED tech in the Pro models, but then other iPads are going to get OLED panels, which is very interesting. Now, OLED panels would be less expensive than the mini LED panels, but they do offer some of the same benefits in terms of higher contrast ratios and better energy efficiency. So it would be a pretty good trade-off. Apple would avoid OLED in the Pro models, though, likely over concerns that they tend to get burn-in a little bit more easily, and the Pro models tend to be used within single apps for longer periods of time. So there's probably a little bit more chance that you might have that burn-in. So they kind of get the best of both worlds, having kind of cheaper panels with similar sort of capabilities available for the less expensive iPads, and then they can reserve the hot new technology for the Pro systems. So that's kind of the current thinking right now. Bloomberg is also claiming that the updated iPad Pros could have a new Pro port in the form of Thunderbolt. This would add the ability for them to use external monitors and Thunderbolt peripherals. Of course, we are able to do that with USB-C, but obviously Thunderbolt's going to vastly extend those capabilities, and makes sense for that to come kind of into the Pro lineup, especially considering the fact that the processors are also supposedly going to be offering performance comparable to the current M1 chips. Even with that comparable performance, though, it does look like Apple is going to keep the A series naming on the next generation of iPads. 9to5 Mac found references to the A14X in the fifth beta versions of iOS 14.5. And the A14X is based on the T8103, which was the code name for Apple's M1 chips, the Apple Silicon Mac chips. So a lot of crossovers in that ARM technology. It's one of the advantages of Apple moving to ARM with their processors that are going to be driving their Macs. There's going to be kind of a back and forth, and it's sounding like these latest iPad processors are going to be right up there with the M1s, which is pretty amazing. So we're starting to really blur that line between performance on iPad and performance on the Mac. Now, obviously, you've got two very different user experiences and operating system experiences, also very different form factors, and that's becoming a bit of debate in our community, right? And, you know, as the iPads move closer and closer to notebooks and the notebooks move closer and closer to iPads, where are those divisions? And I really think it comes down to, in a lot of ways, use cases and preferences at this point. But it does bring out that speculation that we've had for years, which is, are we going to see a merging at some point? There's arguments, I think, both ways. I kind of like it the way it is now. I do very different things on my MacBook Pro than I do on my iPad Pro, but I definitely work on both platforms. And with things like iCloud making it easier to kind of seamlessly move back and forth, also continuity and handoff and all that stuff, I really move seamlessly between both experiences and both devices. I have workflows that I use in both places, and those workflows are actually very, very different. Even if I'm doing similar tasks, like prepping the show notes for the MacCast, I work very differently on my iPad Pro than I do on my Mac, but I like working both ways. Generally, it comes down to, and I don't know if others of you are the same way, I'd be curious to get some feedback, but generally it comes down to when I'm working on my MacBook Pro, I'm generally at a desk in my office, and with my iPad, it's a little more freeform. I like to sit in my favorite chair in the living room, kind of sit down. I will bounce between playing some games and doing a little bit of work. It's a lot more casual experience with my iPad Pro, and I really do like both. And so I don't know if I'd really enjoy it all being sort of merged into one, but it definitely feels like we're moving in that direction, especially as, again, the processor technology gets closer and closer together, the display technology get closer and closer together. It's kind of fun to think about. But as far as the iPad Pros go, the overall design is expected to remain mostly the same. We are hearing there might be some updates to the cameras, including a slight design change with the camera bump. Basically, the cameras are going to protrude, I think, a little bit less outside of that bump, so the actual lenses themselves. We also have a rumor from a case manufacturer that the new iPads could have fewer speaker holes. Not less speakers, so you're still going to have the four positions, just physically less holes in the case. Reason why is really unknown. I would imagine it's purely aesthetics, but we'll have to wait and see. And that's kind of what's in the lineup for upcoming MacBook Airs and MacBook Pros. Longtime listeners of the MacCast will know one of the things that I normally don't discuss and don't cover on the show are Apple patents. And that's because often the technologies that are in patents are either years and years away, or they tend to be things that might not ever see the light of day. But this week, through Mac Rumors, they noted a patent in an article on Patently Apple that seems pretty relevant to the recent rumors about Apple potentially moving to bring back Touch ID in the form of an under-display technology in future iPhones. And it's one of those rumors we've been hearing might even happen with this year's iPhone 13, that Apple could bring Touch ID back. I think we were talking about it on the last episode of the MacCast. As a matter of fact, I know we were, because we're going to follow up on it a little bit. I think the trouble with most under-display fingerprint systems that currently exist is that they suffer from low resolution, and that's due to something called low light throughput and diffraction. And the reason that they suffer from that, or the main problem, is that the current systems use the light from the display itself to light up the finger. So when you put your finger on the display, it's bouncing the light from the display off your finger and then passing that light back through tiny gaps in the display pixels. And that causes them to have kind of lower light throughput, and you get this diffraction, and therefore they tend to be a little less accurate than, say, the capacitive sensors that Apple uses for, you know, their Touch ID. The patent that Apple had that was discovered by Patently Apple was for under-display fingerprint sensing based on off-axis angular light, and it's looking to solve that shortcoming. And in the example inside the patent, they have it set up to work with OLED displays, so it's seeming like that technology could be applied to upcoming iPhones, which of course use OLED displays. Now, Apple claims to make it better by using a series of, quote, angle-dependent filtering options between the display and the sensor. So they're kind of going off angle and using different angles to, I would imagine, get a better pass through between those gaps in the display pixels. And so I think, you know, obviously if Apple's going to bring a technology like under display Touch ID, they're going to really want to have something that is better than, or at least comparable to, the existing Touch ID technology. And so far, under display technologies haven't met that. So this patent becomes interesting because it does kind of show the thought process and a potential way that Apple might be able to achieve that. Now, one of the things that I did ask about last time on the MacCast was thoughts on the need to return to a Touch ID system. You know, like, Face ID is incredible. It's more secure than Touch ID. Touch ID, of course, is very secure, but Face ID is even better than that. And so I was kind of asking, you know, like, why is there so much push for Apple to move to an under-display technology? Do we really need Touch ID back? Would we want to have both? I guess it'd be nice to have both options, but I was really curious to hear from the community. And not surprisingly, the kind of number one response that I got back from the community was that, you know, Touch ID suddenly makes a lot more sense in the world we're living in now with COVID and so many people having to wear face coverings. Now, I'm hopeful that we're getting toward the end of that, although, you know, every day is a different thing, and I don't want to get too much into that because it ends up being a little bit frustrating. You know, we've been at this a very long time, and the end feels like it's in sight, but, you know, to think about, hey, we might have to be wearing face coverings for another year or more years, and Touch ID is going to make it easier for us to use our devices, does make a lot of sense, right? For it to come back and be an alternative in the kind of world we live in, I get it. And so I think that is a really good argument. What's interesting to me, though, and what I've also been thinking about, and I'm curious if you've been thinking about this as well, is why doesn't Apple just adopt the Touch ID that they have built into the power button like in the iPad Airs, right? We still have to have the power button on our device, and that could be a great way to get Touch ID back in there, and they wouldn't have to deal with the under-display technology. It just feels more convenient to me than the under-display, you know, rather than putting your finger on the screen. I don't know. Is that more natural and more natural gesture than the sleep-wake button or the power button? I don't really know. I often turn my device on that way, although I guess all I have to really do is pick it up. But maybe it's just old habits. I don't really know. Maybe I'm a little bit weird. But, you know, what do you think about just bringing Touch ID back in the form of it being on the button? Would that be natural enough? Or is under display really a better user experience in your opinion? And I honestly don't know. I'm really curious about it. I guess we're kind of used to that gesture from the original Touch ID. And maybe that's why Apple wants to move in that direction. Obviously, I don't think they're going to do it unless they can make a technology that's better. And it's sounding like with this patent, maybe they've cracked the code. So interesting. I'd love to hear your feedback on this. Moving into Apple TV Plus news. Again, this is kind of a new thing. You know, every year I've been doing this podcast for 16 years now. So had you told me 16 years ago that there was always going to be kind of new businesses or new things to talk about that Apple, you know, would be doing, I guess it would have made sense. But, you know, back when I started the podcast, Apple was just a computer company. We didn't even really have, you know, iPhones yet. So it's changed over the years. And now Apple TV Plus and entertainment content is a part of Apple's business. So I think it's very interesting to be covering this each and every week. But this past week, Apple did announce that they provided a straight-to-series order for a new half-hour comedy series starring Maya Rudolph. The series is currently untitled, but it's going to be created by Alan Yang, who actually has already worked with Apple TV Plus on the anthology series Little America. It's also going to be done by Matt Hubbard, who previously worked on Parks and Recreation and 30 Rock. In the show, Rudolph stars as a woman named Molly, whose, quote, seemingly perfect life is upended by her when her husband leaves her with nothing except, and here's the punchline, $87 billion. So obviously a comedy starring Maya Rudolph, that's on the way. And Apple did announce that, I think, through their Apple TV PR website. No word on when that series will be hitting Apple TV Plus. Apple is reportedly also in talks to support the next film project from Peter Farrell, whose film The Green Book actually won an Oscar for Best Picture. The upcoming film is called The Greatest Beer Run Ever and is set to star Zac Efron and Russell Crowe with a possible supporting role from Bill Murray. The film is based on the best-selling book of a similar name, I guess, The Greatest Beer Run Ever, a memoir of friendship, loyalty, and war by John Chick Donahue and J.T. Malloy. It's a story about Donahue himself, who in 1967 decided to bring beer to his childhood friends who were fighting in Vietnam. The movie is set to start filming this summer. According to The Hollywood Reporter, Apple has signed a, quote, eight-figure deal with screenwriter Tracy Oliver. She's known for writing Girls Trip and Little, and Oliver will develop TV and feature film projects for Apple TV+. And then, you know, the award seasons have been going, season has been going on. Apple's shows and films have actually done pretty well. One of the bigger hits, of course, has been Ted Lasso, and it won even more awards this week. It was awarded Best New Comedy Series and Best Comedy Series Overall at the 2021 Writers Guild of America Awards. And then the Apple TV Plus film The Banker earned an NAACP Image Award for Outstanding Independent Motion Picture. So far, across all of the awards for television and films this season, Apple TV content has received 88 wins and 342 nominations. And remember, that's for basically the first year of the service. So Apple is doing amazingly well. When it was announced that Apple TV Plus was coming as a service, I think a lot of folks in the industry sort of just saw them as a small-time player, that they weren't really necessarily going to make an impact. And, you know, I would tend to agree that, you know, they're not going to be an HBO Max or a Netflix or an Amazon Prime, but they definitely have done the thing they said they kind of set out to do, which is really find incredible shows and incredible stories and incredible creative talent to work with. And, you know, one of the things that Apple has always been focused on as a company is that intersection of arts and technology. You know, it's something that Steve Jobs talked about. And I kind of really feel like Apple TV Plus and the Apple TV Plus service is really a culmination of that in a lot of the same ways as things like Apple Music is, right? They bring together culture and arts and technology and package it up in a way that I think is pretty incredible. I'm absolutely loving Apple TV Plus. I enjoy it. I enjoy, of course, shows on other services. But, you know, I it's just really fun to see all of the deals that Apple's doing, all of the great content and people that they're signing up to work with. And I'm excited about the future and kind of seeing some of these shows and movies and stuff like that. And everything that's sort of come out recently, I've really enjoyed. I thought Palmer was great. What else? I did end up watching Cherry. That was, you know, I think a great performance from Tom Holland, but it felt a little bit slow and a little bit disjointed. I think I still enjoyed it, but it was definitely different. That was a different piece of content. Of course, Servant, I started watching and absolutely got hooked on, blew through two seasons of that. The M. Night Shyamalan thing, I think it's absolutely great. So there's definitely great content there. Again, I know they kind of get held up and compared against some of the bigger players, but I kind of feel like you really don't have to, you really shouldn't do that. I think they play in a very different space, and I kind of like the space that they're playing in. I like the niche that they've carved out for themselves. But again, that's just my opinion. I'd love to know your thoughts as well. So if you want to send an email or audio comment talking about what's happening with Apple TV Plus and Apple's service, I welcome your feedback. Ming-Chi Kuo sent out a note to his investors recently talking about the new Apple headset, the mixed reality headset, and he claims that it is going to include advanced eye tracking. He says the system will include a transmitter and a receiver and operates with one or more different wavelengths of invisible light. The system will supposedly allow Apple to create more natural visual experiences and allow the user to interact more comfortably with their external environments. The system would also create a lot of opportunities to possibly create user interface experiences based on your eye movements, things like blinking, so you can actually control the UI with the movement of your eyeball. The system also could allow better performance by letting the system offer reduced resolutions in areas where you're not looking. So the display could actually adapt, not have to draw as much resolution in areas that you're not looking at. And that could ultimately help with things like battery life. So it's very interesting to think, you know, you think about eye movement and eye tracking, and I don't know that your mind necessarily goes to things like, oh yeah, you could, you know, not have to have full resolution in parts of the displays if the system was very sophisticated. And oh, by the way, that can help with battery life. So that was pretty cool to read about this week. And right now it is not clear if the system will actually have full iris recognition, but Kuo does note that he thinks that that could be a possibility. So there could be some biometrics in there too, if they build in iris recognition. And that would be great for like multiple users, right? If you could just put the headset on and it would recognize who was wearing it through a, you know, an eyeball scan, basically. Man, talk about feeling like the future. And then adapt to, you know, adapt content or adapt the system to, you know, your content, your games, maybe even your personal preferences and settings and things like that. Could be very, very interesting. As we've talked about in the past, the system is said to be using Sony micro OLED displays, and that it could offer both augmented reality and virtual reality experiences. So it's really, this first generation is really going to be a headset. There is a report out claiming that Apple is actually trying to develop a system, though, that's going to be a lot more portable and lighter than some of the other systems that are currently on the market. Ming-Chi Kuo claims that Apple wants to keep the weight under 150 grams, which is about half the weight of some of the current VR headsets that are out on the market. They can weigh as much as 300 grams or more. And Kuo says that one way Apple could accomplish this or plans to accomplish this weight reduction is by reducing the bulk by using a Fresnel hybrid ultra short focal length lens. And this type of hybrid lens could be used to also provide an improved field of view. The lenses would actually be plastic, actually a series of plastic lenses, which would also help with the weight. The lens system could be a reason why Apple is actually planning to use those micro OLED displays, because that can actually compensate for some of the reduced brightness that can be caused by the Fresnel lens system. An important distinction to make is that this first generation of the system is meant to only be portable, not really mobile. So it is not going to be, you know, necessarily like your iPhone. It's more like an accessory, probably more meant to be used in a given place like your house, and then obviously portable enough to be taken with you and take someplace else. But it's not the kind of thing that you would put on your head and you'd sort of wear around all day yet. That's the future project, probably coming out sometime around 2025. It's reportedly something more like AR glasses. So think the first generation being something more like a HoloLens, whereas the next generation thing would be more like Google Glass or Apple's version of Google Glass. Obviously, something probably a lot better than that. Right now, most are predicting that Apple could have this first version of the mixed reality headset out on the market by as early as 2022, but obviously, at this point, that timeline could easily change. Apple's offering is also expected, as we've discussed, to carry very much an Apple premium price tag. Current estimates have a target price point of around $1,000 US, and that's really on the low end. We've even seen and heard some reports where it could go as high as $3,000. I would imagine there's likely going to be a range with different storage options, different features. Who knows, maybe even there'll be a pro version of it, even though we really haven't heard that yet. But, you know, I wouldn't put that past Apple. So at this point, 2022 will probably be when we see this product first hit the market. If I were betting or guessing, I would imagine it would be more toward the third or fourth quarters, probably sometime in the third quarter so it can have it ready for the holidays. But, you know, this is, again, another one of those areas where I would not have expected Apple to have moved into. It feels a little bit more logical than maybe something like an Apple car or even, you know, producing TV shows. But yeah, Apple moving into headsets and extending their wearables business. Yeah, I guess that feels like a little bit of a natural progression. But again, 16 years ago, had you told me that's what we would be talking about on this show, I don't know if I would have believed you or not. Maybe. Can you tell I'm thinking about this in real time? Again, if you have any thoughts or opinions on this, shoot me an email, send me an audio comment, maccast@gmail.com. It's looking like Apple may or may not have discontinued a few more products this week. Not long after discontinuing the iMac Pro, which we already talked about in previous episodes, it now looks like Apple possibly discontinued some configurations of the 21.5-inch iMac. Unfortunately, right now, you can apparently no longer go on Apple's website and order the 4K 21.5-inch iMac with its larger storage options. The 512GB and the 1TB SSD storage options are currently not available for ordering. The only two configurations on the site right now are the 256GB SSD option or the 1TB Fusion Drive option. A little bit disappointing. I am not a huge fan of the Fusion Drives, as you know. I think, you know, it's a compromise. Really, this day and age, if you're buying a new computer, I would strongly encourage you to consider just going pure SSD. And so it's unfortunate that they decided to get rid of the larger storage options in the SSD. Obviously, probably driven by, you know, which models people are actually purchasing, but it could be a sign that we're getting close to Apple releasing new redesigned Apple Silicon-based iMacs, and that release could be imminent. As a matter of fact, 9to5Mac noted that new iMac models are referenced in the latest beta builds of Mac OS Big Sur. The references carry names that actually match reported code names for upcoming Apple Silicon iMacs that were previously mentioned by Bloomberg. So I think we are getting close. Apple has basically said they want to replace the entire lineup of all of their Macs over the next 2 years with Apple Silicon. iMacs are kind of due for an update. We've been talking about some of the redesign that might be happening. The designs are supposed to take more cues from the Cinema Display XDR, and we're going to be losing that chin at the bottom, so you're looking at all screen on the front. I would imagine reduced bezels. Seems like it's going to be a really, really nice iMac design update. And the fact that Apple is kind of discontinuing some models, we had heard that they might move to a 24-inch model, so maybe we're going to get 24-inch and 27-inch options. We're just going to have to wait and see. An interesting thing happened, though, with regards to Apple Silicon this past week as well. We know that Apple, in order to produce chips for their computers, Apple doesn't actually manufacture those. They have manufacturing partners, and right now they really only have one manufacturing partner. So they need a place to be able to fab their chips. And despite the fact that Apple is moving away from Intel processors, and Intel being very publicly sort of bitter about it, you know, they did the recent series of ads with Justin Long, you know, I'm a Mac, I'm a PC. Yeah, the Mac is now doing ads for Intel, and they've basically kind of been going after and bashing iPads and, you know, Apple's form factors and stuff like that. So they've been kind of poking at Apple a little bit, and it feels like they are a little bit upset about Apple moving away from Intel. But now Intel's saying, you know, they hope that Apple will come to them because Intel's CEO, Pat Gelsinger, shared plans recently that Intel is planning to open up a new foundry business to be able to fab processors for other companies. And they're building a factory in Arizona. They also have plans to build some other foundries in Europe. And he mentioned that Intel hopes to pursue Apple as a possible customer. So on the one side, they're doing these ads, and then on the other side, they're saying, come over here. Is this feeling very, you know, Samsung-ish? It's like the frenemy relationship that they're going to have. But Apple might have to do that, because right now Apple just uses TSMC as the sole supplier for their current A-series processors and their Apple Silicon chips. So there's actually maybe a pretty good likelihood that they could want to diversify their supply chain, and Intel, if they're factories are good enough, if their fabs have the right capabilities, they could end up becoming a producer of Apple Silicon chips. So we'll have to wait and see. It's going to be an interesting turn of fate. But yeah, I mean, Apple is going to need a lot of processors for upcoming Mac products. And, you know, they don't tend to like to be tied to one supplier. So it wouldn't shock me if they ended up using Intel along with TSMC. They also potentially could go back to Samsung, again, all based on capabilities, because one of the reasons I believe they're currently with TSMC is because TSMC has the 5-nanometer technology. They're working on the 3-nanometer technology, and there aren't other fabs or manufacturers out there that can kind of match those capabilities. But if Intel could pull it off, yeah, Apple could do that. And it'd be nice to see them producing some chips here in the U.S., although they may do that already with TSMC, or at least I think TSMC is planning some fab facilities here in the U.S. as well. So interesting developments on the Apple Silicon side of things in the news this week. Turns out that the current HomePod Mini may have a few tricks under its sleeve, or under its covering or mesh cover. I don't know how you'd term that, but basically deep inside there, it turns out that the HomePod Mini appears to have a humidity and temperature sensor built into it. This feature was uncovered this past week by Bloomberg and confirmed by iFixit. For now, it appears that Apple is not using the capabilities, or have chosen not to do anything with the sensor, but it definitely is in there. It's a Texas Instruments HDC 2010 humidity and temperature digital sensor. It's about 1 millimeter squared, and according to the reports, sits near the bottom edge of the case, just near the power cable. So it appears to be kind of far enough away from other internal components that it doesn't seem like it's there for like safety or monitoring, you know, like moisture, humidity, temperature around the device itself. It does seem like it's a sensor put in there for actually, you know, using as a sensor to detect temperature and humidity. It's possible Apple could have planned to have some HomePod features in there, but it's also interesting because if they could enable it, it could be handy for other home automation tasks. So you could potentially have your HomePod detect when the temperature's rising or humidity's going up, and then it could trigger, you know, your air conditioner or a dehumidifier or a series of fans, all those sorts of things. So, you know, Apple has had kind of hidden sensors and capabilities and products before, and then later enabled them with software. So it could be, you know, something that could happen, or it could just sit there dormant forever. Who really knows? But interesting finding nonetheless. Bloomberg has also mentioned that Apple has potentially been developing new speakers with screens and cameras. So even though they discontinued the HomePod, maybe they have another version of the HomePod in the works. What would we call this? FaceTime HomePod or HomePod Vision? HomePod, I'm just trying to think of potential names, right? HomePod with screen. No, that's not very exciting. ViewPod. Yeah, I this is why I'm not in Apple marketing, obviously. But Bloomberg is being careful to be clear that this is just something that Apple is playing around with. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to actually see HomePods with screens as an actual product. It is an intriguing idea, though, especially with a camera in there. It could enable things like facial recognition for supporting multiple users and could allow a product that could be used as a standalone FaceTime device for video calling as well as audio. Mac Rumors' Steve Moser actually found FaceTime, iMessage, and Image AV Capture framework references in the latest build of tvOS 14.5, the latest beta. And tvOS is actually currently the basis for the OS on the HomePod. So those features could be rolled in there. And, you know, kind of the thought process there is, why would you need FaceTime and iMessage and some of these other frameworks, these imaging frameworks, in a device that doesn't have a camera and doesn't have a screen? So Apple, you know, toying around with maybe a different version of that. And when I read this report, it actually got me thinking a little bit differently about, or really thinking about revisiting a rumor we had heard about years and years ago. Our friend Victor Cahiao, friend of the program, was a big proponent of this. There was a rumor that Apple was possibly working on an actual television, like a television set for the living room, and it was going to integrate Apple TV technology. And that product kind of seems to make a lot more sense now, considering the fact that, you know, they're building the TV app into third-party televisions. And also, you have technology like the HomePod that has spatial audio and all kinds of interesting sensors. Imagine combining a large display, a television display, with Apple TV technology, with HomePod audio technology, and a media hub. And why the heck not? Let's throw in, like, you know, mesh networking and all other kinds of technologies in there. You could have a centralized, you know, quote unquote television or smart television that really could be doing a lot of stuff. And it could have, you know, spatial audio with Dolby Vision and Dolby Atmos, all that sort of stuff. Obviously, it would probably be very, very expensive, but also could be a very compelling product. And you're kind of merging a bunch of, you know, separate projects and products and technology all into one, into a centralized living room device. And that seems like something to me that could be very, very interesting. Now, that's not where these rumors are pointing. They're simply pointing to maybe a HomePod with a screen. But, you know, what if we did take it further? What could we be looking at? And could that be something Apple is also potentially toying around with? Don't really know, but love to hear your thoughts on it. Let me know if you've heard this one before. The next iPhone will have a 120 hertz refresh rate ProMotion display. Yeah, we've heard this before many, many times and for many, many years. And again, like a lot of rumors surrounding Apple, if we say it long enough and frequently enough, hey, it might eventually be true. Question is this the time? Is this the year? Is this year it's coming? Well, the ELEC, does think it is. They say that Apple will adopt new LTPO displays for the iPhone 13, bringing in 120 hertz refresh rates and lower power consumption. If I can say that. The displays technically would actually feature variable refresh rates up to 120 hertz, and that's where some of the power efficiency comes in, because if you're not moving stuff around on the screen, guess what? You don't have to refresh it that frequently. So they can play with that variable rate and get better power consumption. Now, it's not clear if the displays would only be featured on the Pro line of iPhones or if it would be on all iPhones. Ming-Chi Kuo has mentioned in the past that it might be limited to just the Pro series. But yeah, this year might be the year we finally get 120 hertz displays. Another rumor about this year's iPhone 13 is that it would have a smaller notch. We've been hearing that one for a while as well. Mac Rumors this week has reported to have images of a replacement front glass panel for the iPhone 13 models, these coming from a Greek repair provider. If the images are real, what they do show is a smaller notch, which was to be expected. But even more interestingly is that the earpiece speaker hole has been moved from the middle of the notch to the very top edge of the display. So repositioning of that speaker hole likely to help aid in the reduction of that overall notch. So that's looking like it could be a possibility. And then YouTuber Max Weinbach at Everything Apple Pro claims to have information about possible new finishes and additional features coming to this year's iPhone Pros. He says there's going to be a new matte black option, color option, and that they will be adding a coating to the stainless steel band around the iPhone to reduce fingerprints and smudges. He also claims that there's a new rear camera design with lenses that protrude less from the body. Again, this is something that we've heard in other rumors. He also mentions that Apple is looking to improve portrait mode using the depth information from the LiDAR camera system, which this year's phones are also expected to have. Improved noise cancellation on phone calls with beam forming as well. So a couple new rumors there about some new technologies coming to the iPhone 13. Recent rumors are also pointing to the iPhone launch returning to September this year, so not expected to have the delays that we've had in past years, specifically the past two years, right? We've been kind of pushed back to October, or at least have staggered releases. Looks like we will be on track for returning to a September release this year. Weinbach also claimed to have the scoop on Apple's upcoming AirTags item trackers. He says that they are going to be slightly larger than a 50-cent coin and have a price around $40 US, about $39. He also claims that there will be just one size, although previously we had heard that there could possibly be a couple different sizes of AirTags. He didn't provide any information on when exactly the AirTags would be released. He just simply said coming soon, although other reports have really put it as sometime in the first half of the year. So we are kind of expecting that AirTags would be announced soon. It's not clear if Apple's actually going to be holding an event, although it's feeling like they might do something in the April-May timeframe. If not, they could just kind of quietly release the products. We are expecting really an event to announce new iPads, and if AirTags are something that are ready to go, it would seem like something that could be tacked on to that event. So we're just going to wait and see. A lot of people thought something was going to happen here in March. That obviously didn't happen. So April, May may be the next opportunity for us to have an Apple event. We'll just have to wait and see. Eventually, hopefully, some invites will go out. But Adam, you say, what about the AirPods, you say? Yeah, well, those aren't left out either, although you may be waiting on those a little while longer, at least if what DigiTimes has to say turns out to be true. They have information from a component supplier ASE Technology, a Taiwanese supplier of optical sensors. They have orders on the books for production to start in the third quarter of 2021. So there was some speculation that we might be seeing the third generation of AirPods in the first half of this year. It's looking like that timing is going to change. And actually, the timing that DigiTimes is reporting on lines up pretty nicely with recent predictions from analyst Ming-Chi Kuo, who said the third generation of AirPods would begin mass production in the third quarter of 2021. That was an adjustment. Ming-Chi Kuo had said earlier that they were going to come out in the first half of the year, but he did adjust that, I think, a week or so ago, and we probably did talk about that on the show. And so the information from this Taiwanese supplier is kind of lining up with that, so it's looking like next generation AirPods are going to be in the back half of the year. So if you've been waiting on those, you're going to have to wait a little while longer. And just as a reminder of what the updated AirPods are expected to look like, they're going to have a design similar to the current AirPods Pro, with the case being shorter and wider. The earbuds themselves are also going to have shorter stems with the kind of flat force controls on the stems. They will not have the silicone ear tips and are not expected to have the active noise cancellation. Those things are not in there to retain the less expensive price point of the AirPods Pro, and the pricing is expected to remain the same, starting at $159 US for the wired charging case version and $199 for the wireless charging case version. And then finally, in the news for this week, because we've, I think, covered just about every other Apple product, of course, we need to have some news surrounding the Apple Watch. Bloomberg's Mark Gurman says that Apple is actually toying with the idea of developing a more rugged version of the Apple Watch. He says that they're going to have a more robust case design that will be targeted at athletes, hikers, and other folks who are better, who need a watch that's better suited for more extreme environments. One feature could be a more ruggedized, rubberized case. Think kind of G-Shock, so it would have a more rugged, shock-absorbing outer shell. The report says that inside Apple, they are sometimes referring to it as the Explorer Edition, and it would be an additional model option to the lineup, similar to the Hermes and Nike editions. Although this one doesn't sound like it has a corporation behind it. Although you would think they could do like an REI edition or maybe an LL Bean edition. I don't know what the bigger upscale sort of outdoor companies are, but Apple might partner with somebody like that to bring this out. Or it could just be simply the Apple Explorer edition. If Apple does go forward with the new Explorer model, it would likely be released alongside new updated Apple Watches, which we would expect to be announced sometime in the fall of this year. And with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. I told you we had a lot of things to talk about. Before we move on, though, I do want to take a quick moment and thank another show sponsor, and that is Headspace. You know, I hate to say it, but, you know, times right now, they can be pretty stressful. And something I think we can all use a little bit of is a little bit more relaxation. And Headspace is the perfect thing for that. Headspace is guided meditation. It's guided meditation in an app. And since I started using it, I have really, really enjoyed it. For me, something that I struggle with personally is focus. And so one of the cool things about Headspace is when you first fire it up, it kind of onboards you. It walks you through a process and really asks you, you know, how do you want to get into meditation? What are you looking to get out of it? So whether it be, you know, you want to be more calm. For me, I wanted to be more focused. I wanted to get away from the daily stresses in my life. And it really helped set me up because I'm brand new to meditation. It's not something I've really done before. And they make it super easy with their app. They had a whole set and series of basic courses that I started out with. What I really loved about them was that they're 3-minute sessions. So I didn't have to spend a lot of time. And it really helped me build up my skills slowly and easily. So I just walked through that, and it had great integration with the health app, so I'd kind of keep track of what was going on, and I would get notifications and reminders to remind me to take that moment to step aside and focus. And for me, I did it later in the afternoon because, again, between working all day and then moving into my evening, which is generally when I'm doing prep for the show and other things, I wanted to be able to focus more at night on some of the things that I was working on. And it has really, really helped me out. And Headspace is one of the only meditation apps advancing the field of mindfulness and meditation through clinically validated research. So whatever your situation, Headspace can really help you feel better. If you're feeling overwhelmed, they have a 3-minute SOS meditation that you can use. If you need some help falling asleep, they have a great series of wind-down sessions that their members swear by. And if you're a parent, they even have morning meditations that you can do with your kids. And Headspace's approach to mindfulness can help reduce stress, improve sleep, boost focus, and increase your overall sense of well-being. And Headspace is backed by 25 published studies on its benefits, 600,000 five-star reviews, and over 60 million downloads. Headspace makes it easy for you to build a life-changing meditation practice with mindfulness that works for you, on your schedule, anytime, anywhere. You deserve to feel happier, and Headspace is meditation made simple. Just go to headspace.com/MacCast. That's headspace.com/MacCast for a 1-month trial with access to Headspace's full library of meditations for every situation. It's the best deal offered right now. Head to headspace.com/MacCast today. And a big thank you to Headspace for their support of the show. Last time on the MacCast, we had a question from a listener, and we discussed some ways for troubleshooting and potentially fixing iCloud syncing issues. I think anybody who's ever used iCloud for any period of time has probably run into the problem where things just kind of get stuck, or maybe just stop syncing or aren't syncing properly. It can be incredibly frustrating and not always obvious how you would go about resolving it. And one thing I talked about on that episode was suggesting turning it off and back on again, or basically doing the equivalent of a reboot, which basically involves logging out of iCloud and logging back in. And of course, that comes with some challenges and some stresses because you got to answer some scary questions about your data, where it's stored, if you want to keep it locally or not, all those sorts of things. Plus, after you do all of it, you kind of have to reset up a bunch of stuff like Find My and Apple Pay cards, and it can just be a really big hassle. And Bob heard that, and he wrote in with another thing that you might be able to try before you do that reboot or reset that could be a little bit less drastic, and something that Bob says has helped him with iCloud syncing issues in the past. Now, this tip for me typically involves more network issues in general, but hey, if it works for iCloud, like Bob says it does, then it might be a less drastic step, and it's definitely worth knowing about either way. So Bob's tip can actually clear up a number of general networking issues as well as iCloud issues. And basically what you do is you reset the network settings on your iOS device. To do that, on your iOS device, you go into Settings, General, and scroll way down to the bottom where it says Reset. And then in that section, you'll see a option to reset network settings. When you tap that, you're going to be asked to enter your passcode, and then you'll have to confirm that you want to reset the network settings. And then once you do that, it's going to reboot your device, and it will completely clear out and reset your network settings. And that's an important thing to note because you are going to have to reconnect to any existing Wi-Fi networks, all those saved Wi-Fi networks and stuff that you have. Those are all going to go away, so have your Wi-Fi password handy. But it definitely can help. And again, especially like if your device is having trouble connecting to your Wi-Fi network, or if you're losing your Wi-Fi connection on your device just intermittently and stuff like that, resetting the network settings can clear up a lot of those problems as well. And if it does help with iCloud syncing and that sort of stuff, that would be generally just a bonus. I know photo syncing if you're using iCloud Photo Library thing too, is that something that can often get stuck? And if this can help with that, that would be awesome. So, Bob, thanks for sending in that tip and reminder, because I think it is a really handy one to know about. Next up, we have a question about Vulkan mind melding old Apple technology with new Apple technology. Always a particularly fun challenge. This came about this week because Russell, congratulations, Russell, got a shiny new M1 MacBook Pro, which is awesome. But Russell also, which is also awesome, has a 15-year-old 20-inch Apple Cinema Display and wrote in because he's like, hey, I still want to use this Cinema Display with my shiny new MacBook Pro. The trouble, obviously, is that the shiny new MacBook Pro has Thunderbolt USB-C ports on it, and the 15-year-old 20-inch Apple Cinema Display sports a handy-dandy DVI connection, actually a single-link DVI connection, I think, for that model. Apple also has Cinema Displays, obviously, like the 30-inch that do dual-link. And so the trouble becomes, how do you hook it up? What kind of adapter dongle magic do you need to be able to connect that display? And I honestly didn't know. I had to go do some research. I didn't know what would be available. And it turns out that you actually can get a simple USB-C Thunderbolt 3 to DVI adapter, basically. I found one over at my favorite place for cables and adapters, which is Monoprice at monoprice.com. But if you just search on Amazon, you can also find a number of different ones. I like Monoprice because I trust the quality of their products. I've used a lot of Monoprice products over the years, and I think they're great. Their pricing is also amazing. So if you're looking for really good cables at an affordable price, I would just, you know, secondarily recommend them. But you can find basically DVI to USB-C Thunderbolt adapters. And that should be all you really would need to connect that monitor. Now, again, the one that I came across works with a single link. And actually, the one at Monoprice that I'll link to in the show notes at maccast.com also had a USB-A port. And I think it passed through a Thunderbolt USB-C port. So if you have a monitor that has a built-in, a DVI monitor that has a built-in USB hub, I think you'd be able to connect both through the single Thunderbolt connection on your M1 MacBook Pro. If you have a dual-link DVI display, you're just going to want to make sure you find an adapter that supports the dual-link resolutions. One way you could do that is to use a pair of adapters, I think. So for dual-link, there are some dual-link to USB-C adapters. And or you could get a dual-link DVI to mini DisplayPort adapter and then just use Apple's Thunderbolt 3 to USB-C adapter, which Thunderbolt 3 is basically the same connector as mini DisplayPort. And so you could pair those two adapters together and probably get a dual-link display to work that way. Now, in reading some of the reviews, something to watch out for when you're looking at adapters or getting adapters is it can be tricky to kind of figure out the resolutions and the resolutions that are supported. So you're going to want to make sure you get an adapter that does support the full resolution of your 20-inch cinema display, Russell, which is 1680 by 1050. And, you know, here comes kind of the last thing that I want to talk about when mind-melding 15-year-old technology with brand new technology. You know, as great as the 20-inch Apple Cinema Display is, and it's still an amazing classic, the design of it, I don't think there's a display on the market that kind of matches the design of Apple Cinema Displays. And I think that's why so many people have held on to them for so long. But, you know, the technology of 15 years ago, display technology of 15 years ago, even top-of-the-line stuff doesn't match some of the basically entry-level stuff that you can get now. So, you could actually go out and get a higher resolution 1080p display, so 1920 by 1080, for about $100. And that display is actually going to have 3 times better response time. It's going to have, you know, 3-4 times, maybe even 5 times better contrast ratios. It's going to have wider color gamut. Of course, it's not going to have that amazing Apple design, but you would be able to connect it with just a straight up HDMI connection. So you could just get a simple HDMI adapter, USB-C to HDMI adapter, and away you go. So, you know, do you spend $50 to $80, $40, $50 on an adapter? I think that monoprice adapter is pretty affordable. I want to say it was around $25 or $30. But, you know, do you want to drop that, or do you want to just drop $100 and get a brand new display to go with your brand new shiny M1 MacBook Pro? Really, I think that's a personal choice, but it definitely is something to consider and something to think about. But now I get the nostalgia. I love those displays. I think they're absolutely amazing. So the good news is there is a way to hook it up. And I'd be curious to end up knowing which route you choose to go and which adapter you get, Russell. So if you want to follow up with us, let us know about it. Another question that came up this week has to do with, you know, we've been talking a lot about Apple discontinuing products. They discontinued the iMac Pro. They're discontinuing the HomePod. And so HomePods are only available while supplies last. The HomePod Mini stays around, right? But the HomePod is going away. And so naturally, I got a question this week via email from Mustafa. And he asked, you know, is now the time to start trying to find deals on a HomePod? Hey, I kind of wanted a HomePod. Maybe I can pick one up for my house, for my bedroom. And is now a good time to get one? Because they've been discontinued. So, you know, maybe they're going to go on fire sale. And that got me thinking about, you know, buying discontinued or unsupported Apple products. I think, you know, for something like an iMac, you're probably going to be fine, right? Because that's going to be supported for, you know, several years, at least 5, 6, maybe even longer in terms of the operating system and that sort of stuff. The HomePod, though, is a little bit of a different product, right? It's kind of specialized. It's got a specialized version of the OS. You know, do you really want to invest in a speaker product that is on the way out? And just another interesting aside on the finding a good deal part. I went looking to see if you could get a good deal on a HomePod right now. You really can't. I mean, you can get it for the standard $299 price at Apple. I think at B&H Photo, it's actually at the $349 price. Prices are actually going up, I think, because people are wanting to grab them. I would guess it's folks that maybe only have one HomePod and are thinking, well, I better grab a second one now. I was planning on buying a second one if the price ever dropped, but now that they're just discontinuing the product, I don't have a choice. So I think demand, at least temporarily, has kind of gone up. Definitely demand for the space gray version has gone up. So that's even more costly. So you can't even really get a good deal right now. But even if you could, right? Even if you could, it's not clear to me how long Apple would end up supporting the HomePod. And definitely, I doubt they're going to be adding or enabling any new features on the full-size HomePod. Obviously, they're going to be updating the HomePod OS for the Mini, and maybe those OS updates would also transition and carry over to the HomePod. But it's not really clear. So in thinking about this, you know, I think you'd be better off going with another speaker or maybe buying a few iPod Minis or HomePod Minis, excuse me, for the same price. You know, you can get 3 HomePod Minis for the price of 1 HomePod. So, you know, you could spread them around your house, which might be interesting. They're definitely not the same, though, right? That's the thing, is the HomePod is incredible. You know, the speakers that are in there, the room detection stuff that's not in the HomePod Mini, it has a lot of advanced features. And again, I think I talked about this on the last episode of the MacCast. I'm pretty sad to see it go, because I think it's an absolute fabulous product, and I'm sorry it just didn't kind of hit with our community. Not enough people supported it or bought it, so Apple's obviously letting it go by the wayside. Now, if HomePods ever do start to drop in price, like if you could get a deal, $149, $199 for HomePod, I might want to pick one up again, just simply because I already have one and it'd be nice to have a stereo pair. But I would still worry about the fact that it's probably going to be obsolete in just a few years. And I just don't know if, you know, spending that money is worth it. It really is kind of a tough call. So we're going to have to wait and see if we start to see used ones. You know, maybe that's a way to pick up one on a deal. But I wouldn't want to drop, personally, a lot of money on a HomePod at this point. So for me, I kind of think it's a really tough call. And that's just my opinion. You know, maybe other folks have contrary opinions, but it just feels like for the HomePod that it's not going to be like a Mac where it's really supported for a number of years. I think you'd be totally safe getting like, you know, a discontinued or a deal on an iMac Pro. Although, frankly, again, that's another tough call. I think part of the reason that's getting discontinued is because if new M1 iMacs come out, they're going to be actually cheaper and probably offer a lot better performance. I know will offer a lot better performance. So even that's going to be kind of a tough sell. So discontinued Apple products, you know, mixed bag. Let's just say that. I think it's really mixed bag, and it's really ends up being kind of personal needs, personal choices, and those sorts of things. I think it's just good to be smart about the fact, especially with something like the HomePod, that you know, it might not have a very much longevity. So just know that going in when you're spending your hard-earned dollars. And then finally for this week, my last couple shows, I had some things of the moment. And what was great and what I love about this community is I made some recommendations. I told you about some things that I am enjoying. And of course, you all came back with some really great alternatives. So one bit of software that I mentioned was an app that allowed you to take better advantage of the touch bar if you have a MacBook Pro with a touch bar. And basically, it was an app that offered up a app launcher. So basically like a dock in the touch bar. And it's pretty cool. I've added it. I don't think it's necessarily as fast as just using Spotlight, which is generally how I launch my apps. I don't even really click on the dock, but hey, if you want to have a app launcher in your touch bar, it was a great way to add it. So I brought that up, but I did also mention that I don't really use the touch bar very much. Kino wrote in to say, hey, I know an app that really makes the touch bar sing. It makes it a lot more useful. He calls it an app that puts his touch bar on steroids. And it's actually an app that I think we've talked about and probably recommended in the past for expanding the capabilities of your trackpad. And it's Better Touch Tool. I'll have a link to it in the show notes at maccast.com. But basically, Better Touch Tool, it is the power user app for anything touch on your Mac. So if you have a control surface that is activated with touch on your Mac, and of course we do, and this would include, you know, Magic Trackpad, the trackpad on your MacBook, your MacBook Pro, the touch bar, all those things, Better Touch Tool is great for that. But apparently, and I didn't really know this, it has a bunch of full customizations that you can do for the touch bar. Basically, Kino says you can change the touch bar to operate however you like in any app. You can do it per app. You can do it in the Finder. You can add things like multi-finger gestures to the touch bar. So sliding with two fingers can do something. Sliding with three fingers can do something. Common thing you might want to do with that is, hey, slide with two fingers and I can adjust the volume up and down, or slide with three fingers and I can adjust the display brightness up and down. You can do that with Better Touch Tool. It also lets you fully customize, as I mentioned, gestures and your trackpad. You can set up keyboard shortcuts and do a whole lot more. Honestly, it is a really amazing app if you want full control over the touch experience on your Mac. So definitely check that one out. I will have a link in the show notes at maccast.com. Personally, I've never really gotten into it because it feels almost overwhelming, to be honest. It definitely is a power user tool. I'm sure I could find a handful of things that I would love to do with it, but I think I'd forget, you know, the gestures. Maybe I just need to try it out. And Kino, thank you for that recommendation. Another app that I talked about recently, I think even it might have been the last episode of the MacCast, was a new app called Sofa. And Sofa actually lets you make lists of TV shows, movies, books, apps, and a bunch more. Basically lists of media that you want to check out. So it's for all those times when someone says, hey, have you tried this app? Or hey, have you ever played this board game? Or hey, I was reading this really great book. Or I just saw this really great TV show, TV show on Hulu. You can use this app to quickly look it up, add it to a list, keep track of it, and then you can sort of monitor and record when you watched it, when you played the game, whatever it might be. And I thought it had a really great user interface. It was a nice, simple little app. And so that was my recommendation. Well, Robert wrote in this week and said, hey, I have a great app that I use for keeping track of all of my television shows. It's called Television Time. Again, I'll have a link to it in the show notes at maccast.com. He said it's specifically for tracking TV shows and episodes, so you can keep track of all the series that you're watching and how many episodes in you are. You can do things like add comments. You can see all of the show details, including the summary of the episodes, the cast, all that sort of stuff. It looks like a really, really nice app. And if you're really into TV shows, you're watching a lot of series and you want to be able to keep track of all that stuff, I would say definitely check it out. It's $2.99 in the App Store. Again, links in the show notes at maccast.com. And Robert, thanks for that recommendation. So, you know, I'm going to throw the call out to the community. If you have a thing of the moment, if you have an app that's similar to these apps, if you have an app that is something like I've recommended but you think is better, shoot us an email. Or better yet, send us a little audio review, 2-3 minutes audio comment. I'd love to share those with the community on future episodes of the MacCast. And of course, as always, you can send those to maccast@gmail.com. But with that, that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Before I leave you, I do want to thank my show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander and PDF Pen for Mac and iOS. You can check out the details on all of their great apps by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cacheFly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you can send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline and leave a voicemail. That phone number is 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. And if you need show notes, links to anything I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you can find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And if you want to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast. You can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. Or find me on Instagram, MacCast on Instagram. But with that, that is going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.